Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your pension is with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie and find out more.
What objects and images symbolise the history of the GAA for you? Well, a new exhibition focusing on the influence of the GAA on Irish society is opening this evening at the National Museum in Dublin's Collins Barracks. But our reporter Barry Lenihan has been getting a sneak peek for us. And Barry, several objects have never been on public display before.
That's it, Cormac. And the fascination in GAA world, GAA circles, always on medals in certain parts of the country. They trade in Celtic crosses. They trade in All-Ireland medals. Think back to the late, great Paddy O'Shea keeping his 8 All-Ireland medals in a USA biscuit box under his mattress. And in this exhibition, there is a big focus on medals, entitled GAA People, Objects and Stories. Several items featuring that have never been on public display before. You have a medal presented to the Irish nationalist politician, political prisoner and former Kerry captain Austin Stack, a 10-carat gold GAA medal made in New York dating right back to 1936. But what of this? A medal from the first ever All-Ireland Football Championship in 1887, won by the Commercials Club representing Limerick back then, played across the road from us here in RTE in Clonski, and a medal presented to Patrick Corbett. It is on display in the exhibition, but as the curator, Dr. Siobhan Doyle, has been telling me, it has had quite the chequered history.
It was won by the Limerick Commercials team. Back then, there were no inter-county teams, so the winners of the club championship in each county went on to compete against each other. So Limerick Commercials is a club that's no longer in existence. You know, it'll always be part of GAA history as the first winners of the 1887 All-Ireland Football Championship. The medal itself will be a design that's familiar to many, the traditional Celtic cross. It's wonderful that we have the first football medal here.
We associate All-Ireland medals perhaps being given out in the winter, a big celebration. But this medal belonging to Patrick J. Corbett, it wasn't given out the following winter. It took many years later, didn't it?
Many years, yeah. The recipients, the winners didn't get those medals until 1912. This was due to financial difficulties within the GAA, but also political tensions. The GAA was trying to establish itself at a time where there was enormous political tensions all across Ireland. So for those reasons, that the medals didn't resurface until then. And there's actually an article in a newspaper from 1935 where one of the winners is on the Limerick Commercials team is doing a call out because he never got his medal. He moved to the USA. He wrote a letter to the newspaper saying, whoever has my medal can either post it to me, and he gives his address, or he says, give it to my brother. I'll trust him with it.
Now, some items, Barry, have never been on display before in public, and there are some items that are going right back to the time of the 1916 Rising.
A hurl belonging to Michael Collins from his time playing in London. But in the weeks before the 1916 Rising, the two leading teams of the time were Louth and Kerry, but they'd qualified for the semi-finals of a secondary competition. So many players from both teams were imprisoned, Republican prisoners in Frongoc over in Wales. So they decided, what do they do? They had what was called the All-Ireland Behind Barbed Wire. And Dr. Siobhan Doyle, who's organised all this, she showed me a ball used at Frongoc. But first, a snippet from a documentary on one when three descendants of players in that famous game returned to Frongoc.
So the Louth team lined out as follows. In goals, the number one, as they say, William Atkinson, Dundalk. Right full-back, Sean Butterley, Hunterstown. And Owen McGough, Dundalk, played top of the left. That's the Louth team and how it lined out in Frongoc on the day.
I'll start with Captain Dick Fitzgerald of Killarney, Dr. Crokes, and later TD, and the player that day, Tommy McEllistrom, the famous man from Ballymacallaghan.
In front of us we have a rugby ball that was used in Frongoc internment camp in Wales, and it was used to play Gaelic football. So there were over 1,800 Irish prisoners in Wales during the Irish Revolution and afterwards. So I suppose in prison, Gaelic games are an important way of connecting with other prisoners and also keeping morale up. The rugby ball was graffitied with the lettering 1916 Frongoc, I suppose, so that its use there wouldn't have been forgotten, and it eventually made its way here to the Nash Museum of Ireland.
Balls such as this, the improvisation that we see here in what's used, perhaps linked as well to one of the famous games, All Ireland Behind Barbed Wire.
Yes, so although the GAA, you know, didn't have a formal part in the Irish Revolution, there were many GAA players that took part in the Irish Revolution and as a result were imprisoned and interned. So, you know, you have a lot of famous players as well, including Kerry's Dick Fitzgerald, after whom Fitzgerald Stadium is named. They were interned overseas. Kerry were to play Louth in the Wolf Tone tournament, but a lot of the players were imprisoned. So they decided to play the match behind barbed wire in prison. Highly competitive match given the talent of some of the players that were there, so that became known as the All-Ireland Final Behind Barbed Wire.
There you go, that's Dr. Siobhan Doyle, GAA Fashion Barry, also recognised here.
And forget about former Kildare miner Paul Mescal and his famous O'Neill shorts. The fashion that we see in this exhibition include from John Joe Goggles Doyle. He wore spectacles while playing hurling with Clare in the 1920s. And in order to protect them during a game, Dr. Siobhan Doyle told me, he made his own protective goggles from bicycle spokes, medical bandages and elastic, earning him the nickname by which he was known. There's history charting the different camogie attire and how that evolved over the decades. But more recently, there's also an object from a fearful man that we saw the sideline up until very recently. His sideline antics very much well known. A fearful man from Kilkenny who once even took on our own Marty Morrissey.
If you want to start wondering about all of the frees in the course of the game, you'll have a fairly busy time. Did you think yourself was a penalty, Marty?
Well, I wasn't too sure, but it just seemed a little bit dodgy in the replay.
I have no idea, Marty. Did you check all the other frees as well to see were they dodgy also? Maybe you should.
We have Brian Cody's baseball cap, which became a very recognisable part of his attire during his tenure as Kilkenny senior hurling manager. I believe it's quite an iconic GAA object. You know, even if you just saw a shadow of someone on a GAA sideline with a baseball cap, you'd immediately recognise it as being Brian Cody. I have a theory that, you know, the more stressed out he got during a match, the more that he would play with the cap. But I'd have to do a lot of going back over different videos to prove that theory. You know, when I was researching, I spoke to Brian Cody about him wearing the cap, and he said, you know, as much as players have to wear their helmets, I wear my baseball cap. He changes it for a woolly hat during the winter, so that was a sure sign that summer's here, is when Cody changed over from the woolly hat to the baseball cap. But almost the only time on the sideline that you'll see him without the baseball cap is during the national anthem. You know, there's a lot of etiquette around headgear as well and baseball caps. You know, during the national anthem, it's etiquette to remove your cap to respect the national anthem, but you're also supposed to hold it in a certain way, and you're not supposed to show the inside lining of your cap, so it's not very gentlemanly to show that off, apparently. If you look closely at Cody, he always stuck to that etiquette as well. As a Wexford person, I had ideas about Brian Cody being, you know, not a very approachable person, but I have to say, from collaborating with him throughout the research and in his donation of the cap to the National Collection, he's a very obliging and kind man, and as a Wexford person, I'm absolutely raging.
See, there you go. Brian Cody's just misunderstood.
There you go. The famous cap. Who knows what lies beneath.
Barry, what can people do then if they want to see some of these objects and indeed more at the National Museum?
The exhibition opening this evening. It's open for the next year. It's free. So if you're on your way from Houston Station to Croke Park over the next few months, the advice is to pop in, and you never know what you might see. There is lots there.
I definitely will do that for sure, as will many others. Barry Lenehan, thank you very much indeed for that.